It's easy enough to identify this hour's guest by the band he helped found around 50 years ago. John McEwen is one of the founders of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. He plays banjo, guitar, fiddle, mandolin, and probably a few other things. He's won a couple of Grammy Awards. Now, we could go on and on, but just maybe we can get some of the details out of John himself. He's in Ashland to play a concert at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship tonight at 8, and he's our guest for this first hour of the Jefferson Exchange. John McEwen, very much a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. I'm glad I found it.
But we are, too. This could be a tricky situation. So
I'm glad I found Ashland in Jacksonville. I played the Brit Festival a few years ago, many years ago, a couple times. What a wonderful spot.
It's a good place to visit, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of people stay, don't they?
They do indeed. In fact, yeah, 30 years now in my case.
You were just visiting.
Right. That's what I thought, too. Just a couple of years. So you're from Orange County originally, right?
Yeah, I grew up behind the Orange Curtain.
I never heard that expression before. How odd is it for a kid in Orange County in the 60s to pick up a banjo or a guitar or any one of the many things you play?
Well, you know, it was unusual. It wasn't weird, I don't think. It's just that the things on the radio at the time were, you know, you heard things like, you know, or
Love Me Two Times, Babe, yeah.
All those kinds of art, you know, all that going on. And so why am I playing the banjo?
Uh-huh.
Well, a group called the Dillards came into my life when I was 17 and a half, and I didn't know what they were. They were a bluegrass group from Salem, Missouri that were on the Andy Griffith Show. And when I saw Doug Dillard light up the stage with Hickory Hollow, it was, oh, I don't think I'm a math major anymore.
Was that the plan, a math major?
Well, I started playing the banjo, and then by my second year of college, I got my first D in calculus. And I didn't realize you couldn't cram calculus.
You know? It's kind of a steady state sort of thing.
There's a test coming up. I was reading the book, the first four pages, and I went, it was kind of like reading Stephen Hawking's book. You know, you read several pages, and you go, what was that about? And I spent more time playing music in the music room, practicing banjo and guitar without really knowing where it would lead.
And so what were the musical influences? Did you have music in the household? Did your parents play that sort of thing?
They sang Broadway songs when we'd go on the Sunday drive type of thing. But that was about it. And
did you have Ethel Merman's voice ringing in your head as a kid or something? There's no business.
And things like, heart of my heart, I love that melody. I didn't like those songs. Green Door I kind of liked. Mm-hmm. But I remember when I was in first grade, my aunt and uncle had a little restaurant, and they had a jukebox, and the record Jambalaya was on there. And I played that thing like 10 times a day. They'd make me stop. And it's funny, fast forward 40 years later, the guy Jerry Rivers playing fiddle on that record was my agent for a while.
Was he really? Wow.
You know, I've had a very lucky, fortunate career that has put me in front of and with a lot of people that I never thought I'd meet.
Is there any instrument with strings you don't play?
Well, you know, they're related, so you can play something on one instrument and it can be played on another, but you might have to change it a little bit. And yes, the answer is, whether I'm any good at them or not, I don't know, but I'm the best me at it I've been. That's the thing that's exciting about it right now, Jeff. I mean, I've done over 9,000 shows in 120 cities a year, average. 40 of them are on my own and last year, and 80 with the Dirt Band. And it's really the dream of that Orange County kid that was growing up with a banjo. I mean, I wasn't weird. I had a dog. I had an East German Shepherd, actually.
East German Shepherd. Yeah. I noticed that reference.
Yeah, it kept people in my yard. I told that joke in Zurich at a festival show, and it killed. I didn't know if it would. I didn't know if they'd, but there's like 8,000 people up there, and you say it really slow, you know, because everybody speaks English. But here I am on the border. Is this going to work? I got to try it.
Is there something about performing with a banjo that you feel like you have to tell some jokes to?
Well, I think performing in general, you do. If you're on stage as a musician playing, there's two types. There's the guys that don't say much. They sit there and go song to song, and they've written a lot of hits, so it works, or whatever, you know. But I have seen and liked performers that are more entertainers at the same time. That I try to draw people into a world that is not theirs in the way that a comedian does. I mean, half of what I do is, yeah, playing the banjo, some of it's going to be funny. You can't be too serious with a banjo. But just in general, I remember watching George Shearing one night, and he was telling a joke about Bach, you know, and the Dillards were a combination of the Smothers Brothers and Flatten Scruggs. And Flatten Scruggs were funny. They were great entertainers. I got to see them 4 times. The first time I saw them, I didn't know them and didn't think I was 19 years old at the Grand Ole Opry looking in the back window because it was sold out. And Lester says, "We're going to bring out Mama Maybelle Carter to do the Wildwood Flower." And I almost passed out. My brother and I had driven out from Orange County. And this wonderful place we live in, America, 6 years later, I was recording with Maybelle Carter.
Mm-hmm.
A band had started. We'd been on the radio. We had been in Paint Your Wagon and all these things, you know.
The list of people you've had a chance to perform with is just staggering. I was looking at it on your website, on your Wikipedia page, which is strangely very similar, I find. But boy, just a long, long list of like who's who in country and bluegrass music, and not just country and bluegrass.
It's very strange. I mean, I don't have that list up there to impress or name drop. It's just more like part of the journey I've been able to be on. Sharing a dressing room with Bob Dylan and Eddie Van Halen was not in my radar when I was in Orange County, you know. But when we played the first Farm Aid, there were dressing room trailers, and I'm sitting in there playing the banjo, fixing my bridge and stuff, and in walks Bob Dylan with his harp rack, you know, putting his harp rack on, doing that. And then Van Halen walks in, and they're back-to-back, and he's going, doing all his hammering and stuff. And I took the banjo and I went, played it really loud and obnoxious, which is usually what some people think it is. But and they both turned around and said, "Hey, you guys want to play some bluegrass?" You know. And I knew they didn't know anything about what I do or did, or didn't matter. They were in their own world. That was the first time they looked at each other. And I got to see Van Halen that night from about 4 feet away. It was the first night he played with Sammy Hagar.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and then several years later in Salt Lake City, I saw the last night.
The last of the Sammy Hagar years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what an opportunity. Wait a minute. I play acoustic instruments, but they were so nice.
Uh-huh. Were they really? Didn't trash the dressing room or anything?
When I was in the dressing room talking to Hagar, I had two boys with me, Jeff Hanna's son from the Dirt Band and my son, and we were going to leave. And Hagar said, wait a minute, hang on. And I said, "Well, what's up?" He goes, "Well, I got something for you, but it isn't here yet." His roadie brought in 20 T-shirts to give to the boys.
Wow.
You know, and you didn't have to do that.
John McEwen's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's one of the founders of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. He plays a solo show in Ashland tonight at the University. I always mess this one up. The Rogue Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship at 8 o'clock. You can join us. You can visit with John McEwen here on the Jefferson Exchange. 800-838-3760. Anywhere in our listening area. 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. If people just want to get a little more flavor, let's that green disc I gave you, Colleen, that's the one that's got track number 3 queued up, Miner's Night. Let's hear just a bit
of
that.
This is a song I wrote on the Dirt Band bus on I-70 heading to Denver. I tuned my banjo to the engine. And I thought, I wonder what the miners might have played up in the mountains.
Okay, let's hear a bit of Miner's.
It's called Miner's Night Out.
bit of Miner's Night Out from John McEwen. That's with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band?
No, that's one of my recordings.
Mm-hmm. And you say you wrote that on the bus.
Yeah, on the Dirt Band bus when we were heading to Colorado, trying to imagine what they would have played back in the 1800s.
There's been that's a real level of imagination that I don't know if is that common in songwriting, just that level of wondering what it was like for somebody else. I mean, getting outside of your own experience. Write what you know, everybody says, but then you wrote things you didn't really know.
I like to write little scripts for songs when I come up with a melody. I'm not very good at the word part, but I think it's more fascinating to write an instrumental that keeps somebody's attention. What I like about that is when you write a song, I met her in the bar, and we went out, and sometimes the song tells you everything that you are going to think. If you play an instrumental for somebody, five different people, and ask them when it's over, what were they thinking about, you'll have five different responses. It takes them five different places. You know, and it's a fun thing to do. That's what I like about film scoring. You can put a mood behind a scene. The funny thing about film scoring is if you are watching a film and you go, that's a great score, then it's not doing its job.
Because it hasn't helped the film tell
its story.
You've
been distracted from the story. Mm-hmm. That's why you don't hear Willie Nelson in a movie singing. You will if it's coming out of a jukebox
right. Or
a car radio. But once Willie starts singing, you go, oh, there's Willie Nelson singing. And you forget what the story's about.
Yeah. You had mentioned Bob Dylan a moment ago and meeting Bob Dylan and Van Halen at Farm Aid. There's another story about you and Bob Dylan. Didn't you book him to a concert at a high school in Southern California?
When I was 19, a guy that owned the Golden Bear was doing some concerts, and he needed a couple $1,000s, so I went and borrowed it from my dad. He co-signed a note at the bank. And a month later, I gave it back to him because we'd bought Bob Dylan for $4,000 at a high school auditorium. And I never told Bob that story. I didn't meet him then. Uh-huh. You know. But when I was sitting in the front row, which is the thing that I got out of it, I could see the limo at this. I could see the stage door. I see this guy get out of the limo with a guitar and a harp rack, walk out on stage, sing for 75 minutes, and go back and get the limo. And I thought, this looks like a good business. He just picked up $6,000. Uh-huh. This was 1965 or so. Mm-hmm. It was right when the Freewheeling album, well, it hadn't quite come out yet when he was booked. Mm-hmm. But by the time the show came around, it had been out for 3 months. So it was his.
So he was on fire.
It was packed.
Yeah. Oh, wow. We have some calls for you. Let's go and talk to Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to John McEwen, the musician.
Mr. McEwen, it is all your fault.
Are you going to sue me for malpractice?
Absolutely not. The very first record player we ever got as kids was a 33 RPM LP player. The very first album that we ever got as kids was the original Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Oh, the one on the tractor.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that led to me watching Paint Your Wagon, which is still the only musical that I can sing along to.
Yeah, when your competition was Clint Eastwood and Lee Marvin, that's not too big of a job, is it?
It's really tough, and it led me down all these dark and dreary roads, all this bluegrass, Flat and Scruggs, and
Mommy, I want to be a musician when I grow up. Son, you can't do both.
Learning to play the tuba and the dulcimer.
Good for you.
And winding up drunkenly watching David Grisman spin donuts on a bicycle behind the Vintage Inn in Ashland. I mean, it's all your fault, sir.
Well, I go through a lot of that in the show tonight. I have footage from those days of both the Circle Be Unbroken album and some 8mm footage shots that goes on behind me on stage. So what I try to do is take people on the musical journey I've been on, along with photos that people go, hey, I remember looking like that.
So, Paul, is that tuba and dulcimer? Is that what you said?
That's correct.
Wow. That's an instrument combination I had not heard before.
It really is. I'm thinking about annoying the significant other by taking up the bagpipes.
That might do it.
You'll annoy more than that.
In any event, sir, thank you for decades of of service. Thank you for opening a lot of eyes.
Well, thank you.
I'm sure I'm not the only one who did that.
Well, I had to open my own eyes this morning to get to see Jeff here, but I got to meet you.
Yeah. And we'll look forward to your show tonight.
Oh, good.
Thanks, Paul. Good to hear from you. John McEwen is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, one of the founders of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, been at the music game for a very long time, and is performing a life in music tonight at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. If I read it off the paper, I can get it done right. 8 o'clock in Ashland. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Another visitor, here's Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John McEwen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanna thank you, John. Many years ago, I was stuck in the hospital for 4 solid months, and a friend of mine made a mixtape, amongst which were multiple cuts from the May the Circle Be Unbroken double album.
And
one of the things that helped me get through that terrible time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, how nice to hear. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Good to hear from you. The people we talked about, all the people you've met over the years, and in fact, you have 2 Grammy Awards, is that right? One for producing Steve Martin's The Crow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one for an instrumental. I had some nominations, but, you know, the award things, they're nice to get, but that's your job. You don't make something and go, I hope this doesn't win a Grammy.
Right.
I hope this doesn't get reviewed well, I hope it doesn't sell. And no, I like to reach people, and that's just affirmation that you might be in the right direction.
Is there given the vast body of work, is there one thing you're most proud of, or does that change from day to day? Do you wake up on Friday and think, wow, I'm most proud of this today. Yesterday I was most proud of this other thing.
Well, I don't think about it that way. I think about what can I do next?
Mm-hmm.
What's next on the horizon? Or there's certain recordings I'm most proud of, like one with Earl Scruggs that I did on my String Wizards album, will always be in my top 5, called Carolina, and then Carolina Traveler. And then this album I made with my sons, there's a cut on there that's just spine-tingling to me. Because they grew up with music, with influences way other than the Dirt Band. Hey, Dad, you ever heard of a group called Fish? No. You want to listen to them? No. Want to go to the show tonight? No. Okay, play something. Oh, they're pretty good. They play well. Yeah. You want to go see them? They're playing a club. And it's all like, no. So finally, 2 years later, I asked one of my sons what he wanted for his birthday. He said he wanted to meet Trey Anastasio. I said, well, where are they playing? I'll meet you there, because he's on the road following them.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to Sacramento, and I'm looking at the newspaper for what club they're playing, and they're playing 12,000-seat Arco Arena sold out. So he said, how are you going to meet him? I said, dude, I'll meet you at the load-in dock at 4 o'clock for the sound check. How do you know they're going to? Look, shut up. I'll meet you at the load-in ramp. And at 4 o'clock, the bus pulls up. Trey Anastasio jumps off the bus and goes, John McEwen, I've always wanted to meet you. You going to sit in with us tonight? Sure. What do you want? How about lap steel and banjo? He goes, perfect. And I said, well, can I bring my son on the bus and have dinner? And so, it's like that's one of the benefits of being away from the family so much, missing birthdays and school play sometimes and all that stuff. I have 6 kids.
6, yeah. Okay, 5 boys and a girl, is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they're fine with that, because they have realized that some of the little, they can say things like, that one particular kid, 3 or 4 years earlier, was holding a boom mic on Tommy Lee Jones and Matt Damon on a film I was scoring. I was on the set in Texas for a bit, and I got the sound man to hire him because he's a strong kid. Who's that Matt Damon kid? Oh, just watch, And this was before Matt Damon was known. And they used to do so much stuff, the kids told me that when they got back to school, they couldn't talk about what they'd done because it sounded like a bunch of bull.
Because it sounded like they were just making
stories.
Well,
we went to Alaska and we, spent a week up. Then I worked with Tommy Lee Jones, and then we did some shows with Dolly Parton, and they couldn't talk about it. I love that line of Dolly's. Cost a lot of money to look this cheap.
Oh, that's right. She's got some great stuff. Let's take another call for you.
Sure.
We have Sandy and Mount Shasta on the phone. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John McEwen.
Yes, hi, John. Wow.
I used to live in MacArthur when I was in kindergarten in first grade.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you're right from the state of Jefferson.
Yeah. How you doing? What's up?
Oh, I just wanted to say that your my discovering your album, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, when it came out, was played a major role in my learning not give in to my musical prejudices, because up to that point, I had been pretty down on country music. You know, it's strictly rock and roll. But that album was a real gem.
We were very fortunate as a bunch of young California hippies. I asked Earl Scruggs if he'd record with a dirt band. He said, I'd be proud to. And then a week later, I asked Doc Watson if he'd record with the band. And
Doc Watson. You know, oh, my God, yeah.
And then along came Merle Travis, and thanks to Earl and Louise Scruggs, we got Maybelle Carter and Jimmy Martin. And
one of my favorite albums.
Me too.
Thanks so much.
And thank you for your comment.
Thank you, Sandy. Appreciate that. So how did you get Earl Scruggs and the like into this project?
I asked him.
That's all it took.
Well, he was playing a club in Boulder, Colorado for 5 days, and I'm taking him to the hotel and back and all that. And finally, on the last day, Earl, I was wondering something. Do you think possibly you'd consider or just think about you maybe would you want to record with the Dirt Band? You know, I mean, where do I get off asking that? And he said, I'd be proud to. And
the answer took a lot less time than the question.
Yeah. And I spent, you know, if I hadn't had the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band to say with the Dirt Band or the band, if Jeff hadn't picked Mr. Bojangles and the other songs that were on the radio to have the success that the people gave us by requesting and buying records, I would have been the kid from Orange County with a weird dog asking the question. You know, and he probably said, well, our son, I just have a lot, everybody asked. You know, it wouldn't have worked, but I think he liked the connection. He liked the band.
Each little bit of success builds upon the success of the last thing, doesn't
it? Yeah. And don't be afraid to ask. I asked Malcolm Forbes if I could interview him once, and he gave me 15 minutes. You know?
We have so much more to talk about with you. We have to take a short break. This is the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. John McEwen's our guest, longtime musician, one of the founders of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, plays Ashland at 8 o'clock tonight. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange, talk more with John, and take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. You will hear Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac at the back of the hour. We're taking the whole hour to talk to John McEwen, one of the founders of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and a very accomplished musician and composer and film scorer and producer, and we could go on and on and on. I like it better when you do the talking. Yeah, your microphone's alive again.
I got a question. How do you get away without having letters?
How's that? Oh, because we don't have, well, we do have letters. It's just that we have so many letters, it's easier just to say Jefferson Public Radio. Because otherwise we'd have to say KSJK Talent, KAGI Grants Pass, KRVMAM Eugene, KTBR Roseburg, KJPR Mount Shasta.
Oh, see, man, I could never do that. I mean, my kids always got called by the wrong name.
Uh-huh.
Of course, don't name one kid Jonathan and the other one Nathan.
I noticed that.
John.
Even you calling them was what?
Yeah, I mean, I always get the wrong name. Aaron, you know, too many A's. Andrew and Aaron, right?
So let me just tell you how good a musician John McEwen is. Well, I said, do you want to play something here? And he said, yeah, but it's kind of early. We can do this in detuning. And he proceeded to tune his guitar in the one-minute-long break. And I think you're finished with that now.
I hope it's in tune.
So you want to play something here? Let me get my video camera ready, too, so we can put something up on Facebook later in the day.
Well, the microphone's not on yet. So
is it?
At least it's not.
Not that lower one?
You got it? Yeah, now you got it.
There we go.
Detuning is a tuning that they'd use in the old days to make it easy. Because all you got to do is strum it, and you got a big chord. Then lay your finger across.
Oh, so it's just open D.
Yeah, open D.
Got it. Oh.
I was mentioning Tommy Lee Jones. He liked detuning. And the film that I scored was called The Good Old Boys. And I came up with I'll do some of that, what I used for that. His characters in 1906 Texas. coming home for the first time in 15 years, riding in on a Sunday afternoon.
John McEwen here on the Jefferson Exchange. John McEwen plays the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship tonight in Ashland at 8 o'clock. One of the founders of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. We've had a couple of visitors already. You're welcome to join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org.
That's the fun part about detuning. You can play the power chords. You know?
And there's some really famous open tune songs. Was it Street Fighting Man by the Rolling Stones? Is open G tuning or something?
I don't know, but they got that from Ry Cooder.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's interesting to watch as music has developed, people who claim I was the first to do this, I was the first to do the fuzz guitar, stuff like that.
I remember hanging out at Jimmy Messina's house, and this is in Laurel Canyon, back in the day, as they say, and I was messing around with detuning. And I showed him a lick on the guitar, and he goes, "Oh, that's really nice. How do you?" And I showed him, and then 6 months later, let's see, how does it go? You better think twice about leaving. It ended up on a, I said, "Oh, I think I see how this business works."
People are always borrowing from each other.
Yeah. Bar. That was a great time back in that period when I lived in Laurel Canyon.
A lot of people who were playing music lived up there?
Well, people were trying to figure out what to do. Nobody really knew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we did a show, for instance, in the Valley at Birmingham High School. It was the Birds, the Jefferson Airplane, the Doors, the Association, Buffalo Springfield, and the Dirt Band. And it was $6 to get
really?
In.
Really? What year was that?
That was like 67.
Wow.
And, you know, it was really fun. I wanted to get done quick because I went to the Ash Grove that night and ended up sitting in with Bill Monroe. You know, he was playing there, and the club owner, I walked in, he goes, John, you want to play with Bill Monroe? Oh, yeah, sure I do. Of course, well, fat chance, slim chance, same thing. And he goes, oh, I told him you're here, and he's going to have you up in the middle of this set. I never, didn't even meet him, but I went up and played Shuck on the Corn. It was really, man, I'm still jazzed about that.
This has really been a fun time in your life, hasn't it?
The whole thing. Of course, there's been difficult, dark times.
Everybody has them.
And the job is a very strange job. I'm going to move the mic stand a little bit.
Okay, we'll just set for the crunch sound.
And, you know, because sometimes people don't realize what it takes. You spend 20 hours of your day for that 2 hours. And sometimes that 20 hours, 14 of it can be traveling. I mean, you can't do this if you haven't done it before kind of thing. It's a very strange deal. It's not an uncommon day for me to get up at 4, get on my first plane at 6, change planes at 9, change planes at 11, third plane, get there, drive for 2 hours, play the show, and get on the bus and do a 10-hour run.
Have there been extended periods when you weren't touring?
I work an average of 120 cities a year.
Really?
And it's a combination of times and places, and I'm really glad that I can do these two. I'm playing two shows in Oregon this month, and then I go to L.A. for a day and back to Florida. Are there times when there's extended times off? Is that your question?
Yes, yeah.
Usually the winter is the lightest, so that's when my vacation, you might, like last December, spent 3 weeks in Germany and Germany and France. Went to Mozart's house. I was in the room where Beethoven wrote da-da-da-da-da-da-da for Elise.
Oh, wow.
And it's just so exciting. And to find out, you know, the music business hasn't changed much, and I tell people this. It really hasn't. There's a guy that wrote his own music. He'd get it printed up on 50 sheets of paper for different parts, and he'd make a poster, design the poster, make the tickets, go out and sell them. His name was Mozart. He promoted his own shows. And one of his letters to his father is, Dearest Father, the current concert only has 3 subscriptions sold. I have to get out there and get more people to come. Otherwise, I will have to cancel. And all. But if I get 3 more students this week, I'll be able to make enough to pay the rent. It's just...
Bless Mozart's family for saving all those letters, huh?
His wife. He wrote to his father, his wife, and his sister.
It's an amazing collection of books. I have them at home.
There's one called Mozart's Letters. Boy, if you're a young musician or an old one or whatever, get that, Mozart's Letters. It's just incredible.
John McEwen's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, one of the founders of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. A few minutes left with him here. If you want to join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. We haven't even talked about the formation of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and I guess it was just the Dirt Band for a while. It went back to the Nitty Gritty?
Nope. The group was playing together at a around a coffee table in a music store in Long Beach in the 66. And let's just say it coalesced within a period of a few months to being 6 guys and needed a name. And one says, let's call it Nitty Gritty Band. Another says, let's call it the Dirt Band. Okay, let's call it Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. That's about how long it took. And the first album was made and it started. And 12 years later, some of the guys said, well, let's just call ourselves the Dirt Band. And I'm going, no, 13 years of marketing out the window? What are you, nuts? You know, and 2 years later, it changed back.
Ah.
Because somebody, a stewardess on an airplane, said to one of the guys, are you guys in a group? Yeah, we're in the Dirt Band. Oh, I used to like a group called Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. Are you anything like them? We are them. Well, why don't you call yourselves that?
So a flight attendant changed the name back.
Yeah, people make that mistake when you're in, like Little River Band changed to LRB.
Right.
Wrong. The only one I think that got away with it was Chicago Transit Authority.
Ah, yes, but it changed it to just Chicago.
Yeah, the first year.
Uh-huh.
You know.
So you have been, I don't know, in or out of the membership of the Dirt Band a couple times? Is it what's been the general trend there?
We started August 12, 1966 at noon, actually at 1 o'clock. And,
daylight savings time.
And 21 years later, I left. I didn't like the direction. I was getting divorced. I had 6 kids to deal with. I had to do my own schedule and work on my solo career. And I ended up, over that time span I was gone, playing on a couple albums, doing a couple of shows opening. That didn't work because it went over too well. I'll just say that. But I was really glad it didn't work because of that. And then when I remastered this Will the Circle Be Unbroken album for 2002, 30th year anniversary, it became obvious that it was time to be back in with Jeff and Jimmy. And since then, we've been working together. I like to put it this way. The band has three original members, Jeff Hanna, Jimmy Fadden, and myself. And the new guy, Bob Carpenter, came in 1978.
The new guy.
Yeah. And in that time period, some various people have come and gone. And there's been different experimental additions and like that.
The range of music you have described, I mean, going to Mozart's house and everything, is there any music you don't like?
I don't like what's called rap music, usually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's music. When it's mechanically made, it loses my interest. You know, when it's like, okay, let's loop that and use it for 4 minutes, you know, and hit the one note on the piano and it plays the whole drum part. And,
mm-hmm.
I don't like the message it delivers, usually. On the other hand, Eminem, I think, is very cool in many things that he does, you know. Mama, didn't mean to hurt you and stuff like that. Some of his videos are incredible. His movie was wonderful, 8 Mile.
8 Mile, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's some music that I don't listen to or doesn't appeal to me, sure.
When you think about coming up in the music business in your time versus today, I mean, it is, you talked about the similarities, Mozart having to promote his own concerts and stuff, that still has to happen, but some of the financial end of the business is so different now with people getting music essentially for free online.
And one of the difficulties is some of it's the same. I'd make $50 to $75 a night as a 19-year-old playing in a bar. And nowadays, people get $50 to $75 a night playing, or if they get the $75.
Mm-hmm.
In Austin, Texas, there's 600 bands on the register. The opening band at a club gets nothing. They can put out the tip jar. The number two band gets maybe $100, $200 and can put out the tip jar. The headline act might get $750 or $1,000. And, you know, it's just so difficult. I make this analogy for the current state of the business. It used to be like you were a guy on the home plate looking at the grandstands full of people. And you're playing a song trying to get people to listen. One by one, people kind of come to you. Now, the guy on the home plate is the audience and the grandstand is full of people yelling and singing. Trying to get to that one. That one person now has, you know, the internet and, you know what I mean. Everything coming at them.
Right.
Harder to get to those ears than it used to be.
It really is. You've done so much. We haven't talked about your show on Sirius XM, your news webpage at syndicatednews.net. I mean, there's just so many things you do that are interested in. Is there one thing you still have yet to do, one thing you really want to do that you haven't done yet?
I'm in the middle of one right now,
mm-hmm.
A planetarium show using Mannheim steamroller music, a show I wrote writing the script for called The Simple Gifts of Christmas, where I got Chip Davis. I pitched him the idea 10 years ago, and last year he goes, let's do it. Chip Davis is Mannheim Steamroller, and Mannheim Steamroller has sold over 45 million albums. And the Christmas music is known mostly, but this will be two shows. And my son, Aaron, is a planetarium program designer, and he has shows running in 14 countries. We've been after this one for quite a while, and it's really fun. And I think it's going to take over the planetarium world on a 7-week run. And then we'll make the Chip Davis Mannheim steamroller steamrolling through the stars for the rest of the year, a 10-month. But that's something I'd like to do. The book I've been writing for 20 years, I finally got an agent that is really excited about it. That's fun.
Is there a title for it yet?
No, I can't figure out what the dang title is.
It's about you or is it fiction? Or
it's like, mate, what's the title? I should have been there. Oh, I was. I can't get here from there. You know, some kind of title like that.
Mm-hmm. All kinds of great stuff that you've done. I'm sorry to have to say goodbye, but we've come to the end of our time here.
Aww.
And the good news is, though, that 11 hours from now, you'll be firing up again. Try to get a nap in the middle. I would strongly recommend it. John McEwen. and the one of the founders of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, playing Ashland's Unitarian Universalist Fellowship tonight at 8 o'clock. John, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.